Number 3.
This Olauk headdress was made in the late 20th century by the Guayana Apalai in the Amazonian area of Brazil. It is worn in an initiation ritual known as maraque. The harpy eagle and scarlet macaw feathers are carefully stored and then reused when mounted on a basketry frame for this ceremony. This headdress was clearly reassembled for sale after it was removed from the community and sold to a collector. It was brought to the U.S. illegally as part of a collection of over 2,500 objects imported in violation of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Flora and Fauna. Through court proceedings, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Department confiscated the entire collection, and the Florida Museum of Natural History became a secure repository for the objects in 2005. I'm Susan Milbrath. I'm curator of Latin American art and archaeology at the Florida Museum of Natural History.
Number 4.
This Navajo chief's blanket is a traditional wearing blanket. It dates somewhere between 1870 and 1900. Wearing blankets are often mistaken by non-native people as rugs, especially since Navajo weavers were, and still are, so well known for their exquisite weaving techniques and the rugs that they produce. These blankets were often worn on the shoulders of a male tribal or clan leader. They were woven with horizontal stripes and geometric figures, primarily in red, white, and black, colors that are highly symbolic in the Navajo culture. The blue color that is sometimes used is called cochineal blue. This dye is derived from the cochineal bug, a scale insect. It is very difficult to process and therefore very expensive. Any material colored with this dye, for example wool or silk, was used to make apparel for high-ranking individuals only. Wearing blankets were considered to be a very distinguished blanket to own and display. This chief's blanket is part of the Pearsall collection. This collection represents a very important donation in the history of the Florida Museum of Natural History, as it convinced the National Science Foundation to support the construction of Dickinson Hall. My name is Elise Lecomte, and I'm the registrar at the Florida Museum of Natural History.
Number 23.
Wood was the traditional material for carving on the Northwest Coast, but with the advent of permanent trading posts in the 1820s, the Haida of British Columbia began carving argillite for sale to European Americans. Starting around 1865, Haida artists carved traditional design motifs on argillite, a black shale found only in the Queen Charlotte Islands, known as Haida Gwaii, the ancestral home to the Haida. This platter representing a shark, a shaman, and a halibut spirit helper was carved around 1880 by Charles Edenshaw, one of the master artists of the Northwest Coast. It belonged to one of the largest collections of argillite art amassed in the early 20th century by Lee Morgan Pearsall, who bought from dealers selling historical pieces and works of living artists. I'm Susan Milbrath. I'm curator of Latin American art and archaeology at the Florida Museum of Natural History.
Number 24.
Acoma pottery is distinguished by very thin walls, a difficult technical achievement without the use of the potter's wheel. The pots were made by molding the base and stacking rolled coils of clay. The shape of this ceramic water jar resembles examples dating between 1830 and 1890. This piece is unusual because it represents an Acoma adaptation of Zuni designs, showing an artistic interchange between neighboring tribes of different language groups in the Southwest. The floral motif and swirling rainbird are more typical of the Zuni, but the red base and other details help identify this as an Acoma pot from New Mexico. I'm Susan Milbrath. I'm curator of Latin American art and archaeology at the Florida Museum of Natural History.
Number 25.
Baskets such as this one made in the late 19th or early 20th century sparked a craze in collecting baskets made by tribes in Northern California. This pomo basket is exceptionally small and jewel-like, shimmering with iridescent green mallard feathers. The coiled basket is decorated with abalone pendants and clamshell beads tied with glass trade beads. To the Pomo, shell beads were like money, making such baskets treasured items that were often given as gifts. I'm Susan Milbrath. I'm curator of Latin American art and archaeology at the Florida Museum of Natural History.
Number 26.
The well-preserved dyed quill work make this Lakota tobacco pouch rare and valuable. It represents traditional smoking paraphernalia from the Great Plains in the 1880s. The central image depicts a bison, a sacred animal that was also a source of food and materials for clothing and furnishings in Plains Indian culture. Porcupine quill work generally is earlier than beadwork in Plains Indian art. Later, artists began to use glass beads acquired through trade with European Americans. I'm Susan Milbrath. I'm curator of Latin American art and archaeology at the Florida Museum of Natural History.
Number 28.
This blanket was made sometime between 1850 and 1885 by the Chilkat, a northern Tlingit tribe in Alaska. Chilkat blankets are prestige objects worn over the shoulder by men and women during dances and ceremonies on the northwest coast. Designs spun in cedar bark and mountain goat wool represent the crest of the owner, which usually incorporates motifs symbolizing eyes and feathers. Our blanket represents a rare survival of a form that was first collected in the mid-18th century when voyages of exploration passed along the northwest coast. I'm Susan Milbrath. I'm curator of Latin American art and archaeology at the Florida Museum of Natural History.
Number 32.
This vest was made by a member of one of the Sioux tribes and dates to the mid to late 18th century or early 20th century. There are several different tribes of Sioux, for example, the Lakota and the Dakota. Unfortunately, we don't know which particular tribe this vest came from. In the 1800s, the U.S. government systematically rounded up Native American tribes, removing them from their traditional lands and placed them on reservations. The conditions on the reservations were harsh, to say the least. In order to support themselves, people living on the reservations began to produce objects for sale, mainly to tourists making the Grand Tour through the western United States. While using traditional methods and materials, the artisans realized that they could make the objects more attractive to tourists if they made objects in the style of other cultures or used symbolic icons from other cultural groups. For example, the tribes native to the northeastern U.S. began making women's purses in the style of Victorian ladies' purses, using traditional beading techniques. In this case, we see that the artisan incorporated both horses, which were extremely important to the Plains Indians' former nomadic way of life, and the American flag, which represents the United States. Therefore, the vest represents a theoretical amalgamation of the two cultures, a concept which did not exist in reality. The vest is part of the Pearsall collection. This collection represents a very important donation in the history of the Florida Museum of Natural History, as it convinced the National Science Foundation to support the construction of Dickinson Hall. My name is Elise LeCompte, and I'm the registrar at the Florida Museum of Natural History.
Number 98.
In the Arctic, water-repellent parkas were traditionally made of seal mammal intestines, such as bearded seal, walrus, and sea lion. This 19th century example is very well preserved, and the vertical layout of the sewn panels indicates it could be from either Canada or Alaska. The parka would be linked with the Eskimo Aleut linguistic group in Alaska, but in Canada it would be Inuit, the name preferred by the First Nations of Canada living in the Arctic. I'm Susan Milbrath. I'm curator of Latin American art and archaeology at the Florida Museum of Natural History.